As far as getting to Abraham specifically, we've talked about how he came out of Ur of the Chaldees, went up to the land of Haran with his family, and then goes down into Canaan. He leaves Haran when he's 75 years old. He goes down into Egypt for a while and then comes back up into Israel. We talked a little bit about all these different places that he's been to. He went to quite a few. And the last place that we saw him at was at the terebinth trees of Mamre, which would have been Hebron. And again, it's probably kind of hard to see this map, but you can kind of see the inverted blue line there, the inverted U. And it shows not necessarily the route that he took, but at least Google Maps, if you were to take the road trip nowadays from Ur to Haran down into Egypt, and then kind of go back, you would cover somewhere in the vicinity of about 2,000 miles. And again, that's just amazing to me that he was able to travel that far with the kind of transportation that he had and with all the animals and family and everything else that he was looking after. We've talked considerable about the promises that were made to Abraham. These are a few of the verses that iterate those promises. He was told about the nation promise. He was going to have a great amount of descendants. And all nations would be blessed through him. Several ways that that happened, but we normally think about Jesus coming through his lineage. And then there was the land promise, how that they were going to inherit, his descendants were going to inherit the land between the river of Egypt and the Euphrates. Stole some of Brent's slides here. God promised Abraham a great nation. And he leaves Ur to go to a land that God was going to show him. He didn't know where he was headed at first. God was leading the way. He travels from there to Haran to Canaan. He and Lot split up at some point there, and Lot goes to the well-watered area of the plains, and of course we know later that he goes to the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. There's the big war that goes on, and there's all these kings that get into a fight. Some of them take off Lot, and Abraham goes out after him. And it's amazing to me. It shows Abraham's wealth that he had, I think it was over 300 servants in his house that he takes to go out after Lot and to bring him back. How rich do you have to be to have that many servants in your house? Abraham was very rich. And of course, this is the first introduction that we have to Melchizedek also when he's on the way back from that. God repeats the land promise, but he tells Abraham that his descendants are going to be servants. They're going to be strangers in the land for 400 years. And in the fourth generation, they would come back up into Canaan. And of course, this is the first introduction that we have that his descendants were going to go into Egypt. Sarah gives her handmaid Hagar to Abram for a wife, and she bears Ishmael. And remember, this was her plan. Because God had been saying, you're going to have a great nation, seemingly at least. It seems like she's trying to help God so that they can have that nation. And then when Abram's 99 years old, God promises that they're going to have a son through Sarah, and he's going to be Isaac. Abraham is concerned about Ishmael. Of course, he thinks a lot of Ishmael. But God says, I'm going to make a great nation out of him too, but the covenant is going to be through Isaac. So Abraham and Lot are examples of people who entertained angels unaware. Of course, the three that come to Abraham, and he makes a feast for them, actually. He has Sarah to make some bread. He has a calf that is killed to for them to eat. He has milk and butter put out for them, and he makes, you know, a great feast for them. And then Lot, when the two angels come into Sodom, he has bread made for them. He has them stay in his house, and so they entertain those angels. Those angels appear to Abraham and Sarah and promise that they would have a son through Sarah. And this is the occasion where Abraham entreats the Lord to not destroy Sodom. starts off with 50, but he winds up with 10 righteous souls. If you find 10 righteous souls there, will you destroy it? The Lord says no. And of course, apparently there weren't 10 righteous souls there. The two angels appeared to Lot. They show him a lot of mercy. They just about have to drag him out of town. They grab his hands, they grab the hands of his wife and his children, and they take them out of town. They say, don't look back. Of course, Sarah does, and she turns into a pillar of salt. And we see how merciful they are when Abram says, I don't want to go to the mountains. Let me go to this little city. And they say, okay. And it was Zoar, and he went there for a little while, but then he winds up in the mountains into a cave. And we know the story about how his two daughters become pregnant by him, and his two grandsons, the Moabites and the Ammonites, are through them. Okay, any questions about what we've covered thus far? That shows up a little smaller than I thought it would. Sorry about that. I just want to make a comment about something that I said the last time that I taught. In Genesis 15 and in verse 7, it says, then he, God, said to him, Abraham, then God said to Abraham, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it. And I made the comment at the time that I think this is the first time that we see that God mentions that he brought him up out of Ur, that we had seen back in Genesis chapter 11 where Terah took Abraham and Sarah and the family up into Haran. But at that point in Genesis chapter 11, it doesn't mention that God was the one who told them to leave there out of Ur. But Mr. Crass brought up taking a look at Genesis chapter 12 and verses 1 through 4. And if you take a look at Genesis 12 and verses 1 through 4, it says, now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And so I've always taken that as being that, again, this is the first that we see. When we see Abraham and Lot leaving Haran, when Abraham is 75 years old and going to Canaan, Mr. Crass brought up, it says, now the Lord had said to Abram, maybe that's referring back all the way to Ur of the Chaldees. And that's a good point. That's something definitely worth thinking about. And I appreciate Mr. Crass bringing that up to me. Yes? Very good. So definitely God had told him to get out of Ur of the Chaldees. And if Genesis chapter 12 and that very first phrase is referring to that, you know, it could very well be. Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so let's get to today's lesson. Before I forget, Wednesday night, Lord willing, Brent will be teaching Genesis chapter 22 and 23. But today we're covering chapters 20 and 21. So for the context, who are we talking about? God, obviously, Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac is born in today's lesson. We'll be talking about Hagar and Ishmael, and we'll be talking about Abimelech and Phicol. Again, we're talking about the patriarchs, and Abraham is the first one that we consider as one of the patriarchs. He is either 99 or 100 years old when the story begins today, and he will be going. He leaves Hebron and goes to Gerar and Beersheba. The outline of what we cover today, four main areas that I want us to think about. Abraham deceives Abimelech, and these are all stories that I'm sure that we're familiar with. He uses the same story with Abimelech as he did with Pharaoh back in Egypt, that Sarah is his sister. Isaac is born. Even We know that God has been telling him for at least 25 years, you're going to be a great nation. And finally, the son of the covenant is born. Ishmael and Hagar are forced to leave. Abraham doesn't like this idea, but it's what Sarah wanted, and it's what God tells him to do, is to have them to leave the house. And then finally, Abraham's covenant with Abimelech, the Philistine. Okay, this is just a map showing where several of the cities that we're going to talk about today were located. Hebron, you can see, is over there close to the Dead Sea, up in the hill country of Israel. It's about 3,050 feet in elevation, so it's pretty high up. Again, it's in the hill country of Israel. But if you take a look over to the left-hand side, over toward the Mediterranean Sea, toward the coastal plains there, you'll see Gaza, and just to the southeast of that is Gerar. And that's where our story really takes off today, is in Gerar. If you go southeast from there, you'll go to Beersheba. Beersheba is somewhere around, I believe it was 800 feet in elevation. And so Gerar is probably even less than that if it's in the coastal plains or the Shephelah. So again, Hebron's way up there, over 3,000 feet, and you go down. In comparison, I believe Athens, if you go up on the square, is about 700 feet, I think, in elevation, something like that. And the highest point in Alabama, even Mount Cheaha, is only about 2,400 feet. So Hebron's higher than that. Okay, and this is basically the same map, but you can see the cities that we're talking about today without, you know, some of the other clutter of the other cities. You can see Gerar and Beersheba and Hebron. So Abram is going from higher elevation down to a lower elevation. And he is going to the southwest. Okay, the red dot in the middle is Hebron there. We've taken a look at that before. Okay, so the story about Abraham deceiving Abimelech. Again, he's 99 to 100 years old. And I believe that Sarah being 99 years old or 90 years old is expecting at this point. Remember, we've already talked about how the Lord had come to Abraham and Sarah and said, she's going to have a son, Isaac, and I will come back, you know, as far as the time of life is concerned, and she will have the son. So I think at this point that she is probably expecting Isaac. Abraham moves to Gerar, this Philistine country, and Abraham said the same thing again that he said when he was in Egypt to Pharaoh. He says, she's my sister. And Abimelech takes him at his word, takes Sarah at her word, and he takes Sarah. Abimelech is the king of Gerar. Okay, this story is very interesting to me, especially this dream part here where God appears to Abimelech in a dream. Remember, Abimelech's a Philistine. He is not, from all indications, anything to do with God's people, because we see later on all the different fights and wars that the Israelites have with the Philistines. But God is appearing to this person, to Abimelech, and he says, indeed, you are a dead man because Sarah is another man's wife. And apparently, while still asleep and in the dream, Abimelech says to the Lord, Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Abraham told me she was his sister. Sarah said, I'm his sister. In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this. He says, I'm innocent. I didn't know. And apparently, that was true because the Lord said, yes, I know that. And he said, I have kept you from touching her. But he told Abimelech, he said, restore Sarah to Abraham. He is a prophet. He will pray for you. But if you don't give Sarah back, you and all your household are going to die. So again, this dream to me is pretty interesting. Again, as far as I can tell, Abimelech is not a part of God's people. He considered his nation a righteous nation. And I guess we all do. Maybe not. But he did this in the integrity of his heart. And so, at least in Abimelech's eyes, what he did was right. and he was trying to do right. And God calls Abraham his prophet there. Abimelech wakes up in the morning. He goes and he tells his household about everything, and they're greatly afraid. You know, if I have a dream, I imagine if you have a dream, I wake up in the morning and I try to remember what I dreamed about maybe, but I don't take any great importance to it. But they did. There was something about this dream that let Abimelech know this is real. This is something that you need to take care of here. And he was able to tell the household in such a way that they took it as being important too. They knew that it was true. And so Abimelech goes to Abraham and he confronts him and he says, "What have I done that you have caused this great sin to come upon us?" So again, the Philistines had some kind of moral laws that they were living after. He refers to what Abraham does to him as a sin. And he says, "You have done things to me that ought not to have been done." And he's right. Abraham should not have done this to Abimelech. Abraham says, "I thought surely the fear of God was not in this place. And she is my sister. We both have the same father," which would have been Terah. Terah was the father of both Abraham and Sarah. But they had different mothers. Okay, you told a half-truth here. Is half-truth all the truth? No, he was deceiving him. He was deceiving him on purpose. You remember when Abraham went into Egypt? He told this story of Sarah being his sister because Sarah was so beautiful. He thought that the people there would kill him to take her away from him. Now, she's 90 years old. I believe she's expecting at this point. Was she still a beautiful lady? I don't know. The Bible doesn't tell us that. But he was still scared that they would take her and kill him to take her. It seems like everything Abraham does, it works out good for him. Because Abimelech gives him all this stuff. He gives him oxen and sheep and male and female servants. He gives Sarah back to him and he gives him 1,000 pieces of silver. So Abraham gets a whole lot of loot. And this next part to me is kind of amazing because Abimelech says to Abraham, "My land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." If somebody had done me like Abraham did Abimelech, I wouldn't want to see them anymore. I wouldn't want to be in their presence. I couldn't trust them. I'd want them to go away. But that's not what Abimelech says. He says, "My land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." Now, maybe this is because God has told Abimelech that Abraham is a prophet and that he's going to pray for him. Maybe that's the reason why he's so willing to let him stick around. But he does. Abimelech is good to Abraham in this regard. And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech's household. While Abimelech had Sarah in his household, they were not able to have children in there. But after Abraham prayed for him, they again started having children. Very interesting story to me. Any questions or comments about Abraham deceiving Abimelech? Okay. Isaac is born. And of course, at least from the time that Abraham was 75 years old, God has been telling him, "You're going to become a great nation." And I believe that Abraham thought that that great nation was going to come through Ishmael, through Ishmael's first 13 years. But then God comes to them, you know, approximately a year ago, 9 months to a year ago, and says, "Sarah's going to have a child, and the promise, the covenant, is going to come through him." So Abraham's 100 years old when Isaac is born. Sarah would be 90. Ishmael would be 14 years old. And it's interesting what Sarah says. She says, "God made me laugh, and all who hear will laugh with me." She's 90 years old and has this child, and she's just joyous. And of course, you can't help but think about what she did when God came to them and said, "You're going to have this child." And she laughed within herself, and God said, "Why did you laugh? Is anything too hard for the Lord?" And she said, "No, I didn't laugh." You have to think that maybe she's kind of referring back to that a little bit. But she's very joyous to have Isaac. And just like with everything that Abraham does, he keeps what the Lord said. He has Isaac circumcised on the eighth day. Okay, any questions or comments about Isaac being born? Hagar and Ishmael are forced to leave. When Isaac was weaned, Abraham threw a big shindig. He had a great feast. And it looks like from the context that sometime during this feast, Ishmael scoffed. And I take it to mean that he made fun of Isaac. And Sarah got mad, mad as a wet hen. She don't want Ishmael around anymore. And so she goes to Abraham and says, "Get them out of here. Cast them out of the house. I don't want Ishmael to be an heir with Isaac." Of course, this lets down Abraham. Because, again, up until, you know, a year, 9 months before Isaac is born, he probably thinks that Ishmael is going to be the heir, the one of the covenant. And he's grown up all this time around Abraham. And of course, you would have grown closer and closer and closer together. He's your son. And now you're being told, kick him out of the house. How hard would that be? And Abraham doesn't want to do this. But the Lord comes to him and says, "What Sarah said, you go ahead and do. Isaac is the one that the covenant's going to go through." So again, Abraham shows his faith. And just like with everything else, when he's told to leave Haran, he immediately does it. When he's told to circumcise all the people in his household, he goes and does it. When he's told to get Hagar and Ishmael out of the house, very next morning, he does it. He gets some bread, he gets some water, he gives it to Hagar, and they're told to leave. And it stood out to me in studying for this. We've already talked about how vastly wealthy Abraham is. And it seems like all that he's giving them is some bread and some water and telling them to leave. Was this a custom of the people back then to just give this amount of provisions to leave? I don't know. I think it was Mr. Waldron, somebody I read, brought up the point that up until the time of Isaac, and they were told that they were going to have Isaac, Hagar and Ishmael would have thought, "Hey, Ishmael's going to inherit everything that Abraham has." And even after Isaac comes along, they probably were thinking, "Well, Ishmael's going to inherit, you know, a good bit." But here they are, they're getting run out of the house with some bread and some water, and you know this has got to be a low point for them. And so Hagar goes wandering around in the wilderness of Beersheba with Ishmael. And again, there's that map, and you can see where Beersheba is, and the wilderness would be close around. And Hagar and Ishmael look like they hit rock bottom. It seems to Hagar that Ishmael is about to die. And so she puts him under a bush. She walks off a little ways, and she starts to cry because she doesn't want to see Ishmael die. Well, it says that the Lord heard Ishmael's voice. And he goes to Hagar, and he comforts her, and he tells her, "Ishmael is going to be a great nation." You remember that first time when Hagar left because Sarah was treating her so bad that the angel told Hagar, "Ishmael's going to be a great nation. You are with child. He's going to be a great nation." At this point, with everything so low, it seems like she's forgotten that. But the Lord reminds her of it. And so she's able to find water. He provides water for them. And Ishmael is revived. And it goes on to say that Hagar finds a wife for Ishmael. Ishmael, again, is at least 14 years old at this point, maybe a little older. But she goes at some point and finds a wife for him from Egypt. Remember, Hagar's from Egypt herself. And he becomes an archer in the wilderness of Paran. There are several things in the Old Testament that happened in that wilderness. Remember when Moses sent out the 12 spies to spy out the land of Canaan, and only Joshua and Caleb came back with a good report? They left the wilderness of Paran to go up into Israel to spy it out. And also, this is one of the places where David went to when he was running from Saul. Okay, questions or comments about that? Yes, sir. Very good. Scott brings up the fact that there was still some kind of relationship between Ishmael and Abraham, because when Abraham dies, Ishmael and Isaac were the ones to come bury him. Good. Cool. Very good. So when Hagar left because of how Sarah was treating her, the angel told her Ishmael's going to become a great nation. And the passage that Colton brings up, Abraham is told, yes, the covenant's going to come through Isaac, but I'll make a great nation out of Ishmael also. And then today, the Lord tells Hagar, Ishmael's going to be a great nation. Good, thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. Abraham's covenant with Abimelech. Abimelech comes out to see Abraham, and he brings his commander of his army out with him, Phicol. Remember, Abimelech and Abraham have seen each other before in Gerar. I take it Abimelech is still there, and we'll see that Abraham is in Beersheba. Abimelech comes to Abraham and says, "We can see that God is with you in all that you do." And obviously that's true. He says, "Swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me." And Abimelech has every reason to ask Abraham to do that, because of the way that Abraham had treated him earlier, of saying just part of the truth about Sarah, his wife. And so this he wants him to make a covenant with him. He knows that God is with him, that he is a prophet of God, and he wants him to deal truthfully with him. Abraham agrees to that, but he says, there's this other issue we've got to work out first. I had this well, and your servants come and took it away from me. Abimelech says, this is the first I've heard about it. I don't know anything about this. So Abraham gives him some animals, some sheep and some oxen, and they make a covenant. But Abraham sets aside to themselves 7 ewe lambs. And Abimelech says, what are they doing over there by themselves? And Abraham says, they are going to be a witness between me and you that I dug this well. There's not going to be any more fighting over this well. You take these sheep, and we're going to be in agreement that it's my well. I dug it. Okay, so that place is called Beersheba, or the well of the oath, or the well of the 7 ewe lambs, or the well of the 7. So they go back to Gerar. Abimelech and Phicol do. And Abraham stays there, and it says, many days in the land of the Philistines. So Beersheba at that point was the land of the Philistines. You know, a lot of times in the Old Testament, when it talks about the territory of Israel, it'll talk about from Dan to Beersheba. Dan in the north, Beersheba in the south, being probably the last or amongst the most southern arable areas in the land of Israel. But at that time, it was still part of the Philistines. They had control over it. He plants a tamarisk tree, and he calls on the name of the Lord there. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the only time that we're told that Abraham planted anything. I think that's right. We're talked about, you know, we're told about all the animals and flocks and everything else that he has, but I think this is the only time that we're told that he plants anything. Okay, questions or comments about this covenant that was made between Abraham and Abimelech? Okay, the red box there showing where Beersheba was at the top of the Negev, the south, that desert area. And then, again, the slide that I used the last time that I talked, just to remind us of the fact that God had said to Abraham, if you can number the stars, then you'll be able to number your descendants. And now, in today's lesson, Isaac is born, the first of those descendants of the covenant. Okay, summary and applications. God keeps his promises on his own timetable. I used this the last time, but again, God has been telling Abraham for at least 25 years that he is going to be a great nation, and today we see in the lesson that Isaac is the son of the covenant. He is born. God, I'm sure Abraham would have thought he would have had that first son of the covenant a lot earlier. But God does things in his own time. We can't get impatient with God. We must always be honest. And we saw where Abraham and Sarah were dishonest today. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25, it says, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. We have to tell the truth. Abraham, we think of Abraham as being a man of great faith, and he was. He's a great example of faith. But just like Tony brought up on Wednesday night, God shows us, even in the best of people, their warts, their failings. And we see that in Abraham and Sarah today. But God is forgiving, and to me that's very encouraging. Even though Abraham is caught up in telling these half-truths, and in a way he's showing a lack of trust in God to keep him safe by doing that, God still calls Abraham a prophet. And God still told Abimelech, Abraham will pray for you. And I think the indication is there, I'm going to hear his prayer. So, when I think about all the times that I have failed God, all the times that I have sinned, still to think that God didn't give up on Abraham, God is still willing to not give up on us if we'll repent and do right. Any questions or comments about today's lesson or anything that we've covered in the book of Genesis so far? Ms. Crash just brings up the fact that Abraham did immediately whatever God told him to do, and that's a great example for us. Thank you for your participation today.